Our ship was ready. Circe had filled every spare corner of the hold with wineskins, grain, salted and smoked meats, dried fruit and jars of milk. "Keep the seals unbroken and the milk will stay fresh," she promised. A glossy black ram and white ewe were penned in, munching at the hay in the feed bags hung over their heads. Circe and I lingered on the shore while the crew tightened the stays, fastened the tackle, and prepared to sail. "Farewell, son of Laertes." Circe smiled, but I could see sadness in her eyes, and I suppose she saw the same in mine. The north wind we had been promised filled our sails. It was easy going all the way to ocean's great stream, close to the land of the Cimmerians. As we sailed on, the sunlight was blotted out by threads of mist that slowly thickened around us into dense fog. The wind dropped, the ship slowed. Only a few men were needed to row us forward on such flat, motionless water. The temperature quickly fell. Apprehension, as much as the chill, caused us all to shiver. No sun, no birdsong, no visibility further than half the length of our vessel. One of the men, perhaps to give himself courage, began to whistle. Eurylochus silenced him with a swift kick. We endured an hour or more of this noiseless going, the hairs on the back of our necks prickling, our imaginations bodying forth numberless horrors. At last the hull ground against shingle. The men led the sheep and carried the sacks and jars we would need. We trekked over slimy mud until we came to the place Circe had described, the Grove of Persephone. Eurylochus and his second-in-command Perimedes held the sacrificial sheep. I dug out the trench and poured in the milk and the honey, then the wine and water, before sprinkling it all over with the barley meal. We prayed. I promised sacrifices to the dead when we got home. I cast my mind back to Circe and how she had spelled out the instructions for this summoning of the dead. No, I had forgotten nothing. We held the sheep's heads over the ditch, and I quickly slit their throats. The moment the blood gushed down into the trench, the spirits of the dead were around us, swimming and swarming and sweeping through the air, wailing and shrieking. Men, women, children, warriors with their flesh ripped open, every kind of person killed in every kind of manner. They came from everywhere, rising up out of the ground and descending from the mist, all with one purpose. You must not let them drink. They sobbed and they clamoured as the men and I held them at bay with our swords, spears, curses and threats. Only when I had spoken to Tiresias could I let them drink. So Circe had commanded. But the first to approach made me cry out with astonishment. It was the ghost of Elpenor, the young fool who had fallen from the roof. "You left my body where it was, sire, above ground and unmourned." "My poor boy, I'm so sorry. The preparation for leaving, so much commotion, I neglected to give the command to bury you." "Then I am doomed, my lord Odysseus, doomed to eternal restlessness." "No," I said, deeply moved. "I promise you this, we will return to Aeaea. We will bury your body with full honours and prayers for your soul. It is the very least we owe you. You have my absolute word." Elpenor smiled and his shade faded from my sight. Now at last I saw the shimmering ghost of dead Tiresias approach, golden staff in hand. Blind in life, he could now see, for he recognized me.
"If you want to know your future, put down your sword, son of Laertes, and let me drink."
I stepped back, and tried not to show the disgust I felt as I watched him bend down and lap greedily at that strange mixture. He straightened and wiped the back of his hand against his blood-streaked beard, sighing with the satisfaction of a man who has feasted well.
"I know how much you long to get home, Odysseus, but what you did to Polyphemus enraged Poseidon, who will take a great deal of placating. Your future is clear to me. I should say futures. Different paths spring from different choices for all. Firstly, I can tell you that you will find home, and you can do so swiftly and easily. Before long, your ship will land on Thrinacia, the island on which Helios keeps his cattle and sheep. The sun god loves those beasts more than he loves any man or woman. If you leave them untouched, all will go well. You will soon reach Ithaca, and all will be well there. But if you harm a single one of those sacred animals, I foretell the loss of your ship and every last one of your men. Your homecoming will be delayed by years, Odysseus. You may, in the end, reach Ithaca, but your home will be overrun with rapacious suitors who will make free with your land, your palace, and everything you possess, all in pursuit of your wife's hand in marriage, for everybody will believe you long dead. Your wit and strength may at last overcome those suitors, but your debt to Poseidon will not yet have been fully paid. Finally home, and in the bosom of your wife and son, scores settled, and peace established at your hearth, you will immediately have to leave Ithaca, an oar on your shoulder, to search for the land whose people have never heard of the sea, who use no salt, have no understanding of ships or sailing, and do not so much as know what an oar is. When a stranger hails you there, points at the oar on your shoulder, and asks why you are carrying a winnowing fan, you are to plant the oar in the ground, make sacrifices to Poseidon, and, as you make your way back home, to each of the 12 great gods in turn. Do this, and a gentle death from the sea awaits, after a prosperous old age surrounded by those who love you. Tiresias, if this is my destiny, then I accept it and thank you for the honour you have done me. The spirit bowed and receded. Still lost in thought, I did not at first recognise the shade who now came up to drink. But when she raised her head from the trench, I knew my mother, Anticlea, daughter of Autolycus. It sent a spear of pain through me to see her here. She knew me, too, of course.
Odysseus, my son, not back home from Troy yet?
All these years I have pictured you and my father at home in Ithaca. Oh, mother, it sorrows me to think of you in this terrible place. Tell me, how were things when you died? How are Penelope and my boy, Telemachus? Is my father still alive, or is he with you here?
Laertes is alive, but age has not been kind to your father. Infirm and unhappy, he lives away from the palace at his farmhouse, a simple, rough life, and now a life lived alone.
Unhappy?
Odysseus, he misses you. Your wisdom and kindness are missed by everybody. I missed them so much that I died. Oh, mother. Penelope mourns too, of course, but she is well. She is faithful to you and longs for your return. Telemachus is a fine boy. You would be proud. You will be proud. But hurry home, my dear boy. Hurry home. The longer you stay away, the greater the danger for them all. I tried to hug her, but she was a cloud, a form without substance, and her wraith slipped through my arms. Another ghost stepped up to drink now, and I could not help crying out with shock at the sight of him. Agamemnon? Not you? What happened? Were you lost at sea in the terrible storm when we left Troy?
Perhaps it would have been better if I had, said the King of Men with a somber laugh.
The story he related horrified and saddened me. In ghastly detail, he told me how that unnatural creature, his wife, Clytemnestra, threw a net over him when he was bathing and stabbed him as he lay trapped and helpless.
And as I died, the last thing I saw was her and that vile rat, my cousin Aegisthus, cutting down the innocent Cassandra. Listen, old friend, I know you're devoted to your wife Penelope, and you believe she is devoted to you, but trust no woman, no matter how beautiful, no matter how much they tell you they love you. Swear it.
I bowed my head, but stayed silent. He seemed to understand, for he changed the subject.
Tell me, Odysseus, what news on your travel of my son Orestes and Electra? They must be alive, surely, or I would have found them here.
Agamemnon, how could I possibly know? The sight of this once all-powerful figure, the King of Men, reduced to so plaintive, pitiful, and pathetic a state, filled me with sorrow and a kind of anger against the gods. The world knew that Zeus hated the clan of Tantalus and Atreus, but such pain and loss, such failure after so great a life, who could deserve that? The spirit of Agamemnon melted away, to be replaced by someone whose presence here I could surely celebrate. Achilles! Achilles, my dear friend! I came here to consult Tiresias. He has unrolled my future for me. I haven't reached home yet, but I'm confident that I will. What about you, though? Already there are more songs and poems in the world telling of your glorious exploits than of any mortal that ever lived. And down here I know that you must be the prince of the dead, admired and adored by all who meet you. Elysium is your home, and the fields of Asphodel. Yes? Yes? Yes, I'm allowed the honour of the Elysian fields. Yes, I tread the meadows of Asphodel. Yes, they call me prince and praise me as some kind of hero. But I tell you this, Odysseus, he almost snarled these words out, I would rather live as a dirt-poor peasant, eking out the most wretched living, tilling barren soil, than ruler of this whole kingdom. It's a kingdom of the dead. You see their forms, you hear their voices, but they are, we are. There is no life, no joy, no hope. The peach is sucked of all its juice. There is no meaning here. So you damn well live, old friend. Leave this cursed place and live every day with all the force and fire you can summon. I was silent for a while, saddened beyond anything to hear such words from golden Achilles. I found a way to cheer him up by filling him with news of his son Neoptolemus. I told of his skills and courage in the field, leaving out the more unpleasant stories that revealed the boy's seemingly endless capacity for bloody and merciless cruelty. Achilles' shade left me and loped away across the Asphodel, glorying, I suppose, in proud thoughts of his magnificent son.
By now, the multitude of dead souls began pressing me so hard to drink that I could hold them back no longer. The men had been huddled behind me, white with fear, horror, and disgust. The signal to return to our ship could not have been more welcome. We rowed back the way we came until we found Ocean's Stream once more. There we picked up a good stiff breeze and sailed with a cheer back into the blue and sunlit sea.